Washington! What a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Say good morning to Jonathan Allen from the Washington Commanders. He's presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. What's up, Jonathan? Good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing today?
We're doing well. You're coming off a really good performance against the Browns. You held them to 13 points for your fourth straight win. Take us through the game. When did you guys know that you were just like, you know what?
We're out of the tunnel.
We're just dominating this team.
Cleveland sucked.
We're not going to let them do anything offensively today. This is pretty much a lockdown performance by the defense.
You know, the thing that's so awesome is when you listen to Coach Quinn speak, he always talks about brotherhood and playing together, right? Things that a lot of people overlook. But when you play a certain way, a lot of teams won't be able to last playing against that for a long time. So the way you see guys run into the ball, the way you see OZ run 56 yards and recover the fumble, that Austin Eckler fumble, just the way we play, a lot of teams won't be able to handle that. And it's so exciting being a part of it. So, you know, going to the game, we were confident. Obviously, you can never be complacent in this league. Every team has good players. But I like the way we practice. I like the way we play. And you know, I like the energy we bring week in and week out. So we were excited going in.
Well, one of those guys that always brings energy is Frankie Louvu, and he just had a monster game. 2.5 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, led the team in tackles. He had 3 quarterback hits. I mean, he was just like a man possessed out there. Talk about what he brings on the field. And I also seen, you know, like a lot of the fans have seen him doing the haka dance inside the locker room, getting all everybody fired up. Just tell about everything he brings to the team.
I mean, I think the crazy thing is you guys see what he brings to just the amount of energy he plays with, the enthusiasm. I mean, it's exciting when you have a guy who can spread energy across the offense, defense, and special teams like that. And I think you see that being played out. I mean, every time our special teams takes the field, it's exciting. Every time offense makes a great play, he's one of the first guys up. So I don't think a better guy could have had a better game.
So I'm a little confused, I'll be honest with you, because after the first few weeks, I just said, man, this defense has let me down again. I honestly don't believe in you guys. And the last 2 weeks, you're just making me look like an idiot. You guys are, I mean, pressuring, you're kind of doing everything. What's been the difference, and is this the real deal?
You know, the difference between having success and not is razor thin in this league. So even though we weren't having the success that we wanted the first couple of weeks, we were doing the little things right, and we just had to carry that over to the game. But it also goes the same way. You know, we're having a lot of success these last 2 weeks, but that's not a time for us to be like, all right, now we're good. No, every week, when to do, you have to work on the little things week in and week out. And I think the true character of a team is revealed when you see how they respond after playing well. I think anybody can respond after playing badly because you have a bad taste in your mouth. But when you're playing well and people are telling you how good you're playing and how good you look, that's when you find out about a real team, because it's easy to not do the little things. You get complacent, so. I think that's very exciting to see how the team responds week in and week out, regardless of how we played the week before.
All right, explain it to me, because I know nothing about defense. How do you slow down Henry? And then if you do, then Lamar beats you. It seems like a deadly 1-2 combo.
Well, two things. If your offense puts up points, it doesn't allow them to just run the ball day in and day out. But really, it's going to come down to a battle of the line of scrimmage. We just have to win the line of scrimmage, and I'm so excited, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity come Sunday. Mm-hmm.
You played them in 2020. That's the last time you played them, lost 31-17. What do you remember about that game?
The elusiveness of Lamar Jackson. I mean, the thing that's tough is you can dominate the line of scrimmage, you can pressure him, but you still got to get him to the ground, and he's a playmaker. So we're never going to have our hands full, but we're looking forward to the opportunity.
Yeah, Lamar had a 50-yard touchdown run in that one.
Yeah. Well, he had a good game, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, but you got a very similar player on your side of the ball in Jaden.
I mean, again, it's going to be a very exciting game. I think this is a good opportunity to see where we're at as a team and as a franchise. And, I mean, games like this don't come, they haven't been around too often for this organization. So we're excited to put in the work. We're excited to go out there and put a good product on the field. And I'm looking forward to this game.
So offensively, like, we had an idea that Jaden was special just from, and he's outperformed any of our expectations. But I don't think anybody imagined that we'd be scoring 31 points a game, you know, leading the NFL through 5 weeks. Besides Jaden, is there anybody that's kind of even surprised you a little bit, even though you're there every week? Like maybe Luke McCaffrey or something? Like, he's really making some big plays. Not a lot, but he's making a big play or two sort of every game. You know, Noah Brown's come in and made some plays. Like, Eckler is showing that he's still got a lot of life. Like, who's kind of maybe impressed you or surprised you?
Kind of like you were just saying, it's really hard to choose one person and say he's been the guy who's been the most surprising, because 1 week it is McCaffrey, 1 week it is Austin Eckler, 1 week it's OZ or Noah Brown. So I would just say the intensity in which our offense plays with is exciting. Like, you see guys flying down the field, dying to get a block. You see guys trying to do everything to make sure they can get the block to get their guy open. Or just the effort and the energy that the offense plays with has been exciting. And I really don't think I can choose one person because,
yeah,
like you said, every week is always somebody new.
The O-line, too. I mean, the O-line has shocked us.
Yeah. I mean, when people always ask, what's the hardest offensive line I go against? Or who's the best offensive line player I went against? It's hard for me to say because you can have a really good offensive line as far as players individually, but it's about how they play together. And I think in the NFL, there's so much that goes into having success. You got to have a quarterback. You've got to have an offensive line who plays together and knows how to play well with one another. You got to have a scheme that's built around the quarterback that allows him to be successful. And you have to have coaches that put your players in the position. So there's so much that goes into it. But when you look at the offensive line, man, they're just in sync, they're in tune, they're physical. I mean, it's exciting to watch.
Joined by Jonathan Allen, presented by Main Street Bank. I want to go back to the game against Cleveland for just a second. From looking at your timelines between you and Deshaun Watson, I think you've faced him at least once before in your career, earlier in your career. Talk about how he looked then as opposed to how he looked this past weekend at Northwest Stadium. What's the difference there?
Honest, he looks like a player who has stuff going on above the shoulders. You know what I mean? There's definitely a confidence thing that's been going on. And, you know, I always tell people this. It doesn't matter how great of a player you are. If you don't have confidence, you're not a good player. So I would say that's just the biggest difference. I mean, I think physically, obviously he's probably not as athletic as he was 6-7 years ago, however long it was. But he's still, I mean, I still think he has that potential. But I don't know. Football is a weird game, man. If mentally you're not good up top, like, you're going to be weird. You're not going to be confident. You're not going to be playing free. You're going to be thinking. You're going to be reacting slower. So I would probably say that's probably the biggest difference for him right now.
You've had some bad luck just with your pro team because in college you never lost, right? And that was a great feeling for you as a player. But then you get to Washington and everything kind of drops down considerably. Are you surprised you guys are 4-1?
Am I surprised? No, I'm not surprised. I'm excited. I'm happy. Not complacent. But surprised? No, because I feel like if you were to say we're surprised, that means I didn't believe that we could do this. Mm-hmm. And I knew we could do this. We just had to go out there and execute. But again, it's still early in the season. You know, I know the DC fans have waited so long for this, but my job as a player is to make sure I remain humble, I remain focused, and I focus on the little things, and I let you guys go out there and just have all the fun and, you know, be excited for what we've done so far. But it's only so far. I mean, we still have so much football left to be played, and I'm looking forward to continue to do the little things that are going to help us be successful moving forward.
You should have heard one of the fans who just called us last segment. He said, I don't think we're going to lose again. I mean,
again, like the fans of this team, they deserve it. They deserve it, and I don't want to hear any of the fans say anything to us. Enjoy it. They've been through a lot. Let the players focus on what we got to do, and we'll remain humble. Let the fans go out there and have their fun.
How is your body right now through five games?
Probably one of the best it's ever felt. I mean, when you look at how much the offense controls the football and the reps that we're playing defensively and the rotation that we're having, I mean, I'm just not playing the same numbers that I've ever had to in the past, so I feel really good.
You're fresh.
It's right. Nice. It definitely seems like even...
And you got good depth, too, at that position.
It seems exactly, like your snap counts are down a little bit, and that's good. You're happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first things that we talked about when this new coach staff came in. It was, listen, like, you're playing too much. And I'm like, I agree, I am playing too much. So we were both on the same page about that, and I have no problem my numbers being down.
Right, right.
Talking to Pro Bowl defensive tackle Jonathan Allen from the 4-1 Washington Commanders. All right, I'll bring up a sore subject. You never lost to Vandy, did you?
No. And here's what I always say about this. Any player is going to get up when you play against Georgia. But from a coach's perspective, you have to make sure your team does not overlook teams like Vanderbilt. And I think that's what make coaches like Coach Saban, Urban Myers, Kirby Smart, that's what makes them elite. You don't see the dip off against those, I don't want to say lesser teams because they beat us, but you don't see the fluctuation week to week, you know, with Coach Saban. I mean, because he's always going to have us ready, have us prepared. And I like Caleb DeVore, so it was unfortunate to see. But, I mean, as players, man, if anything, go into those games thinking it's a stat game or something. But it just, in college, one loss, man, especially to an in the division now, like, that's brutal. That's brutal.
Time now for the Pizza Bowlies question of the week. Pizza Bowlies offering wings, subs, and more. Pizza Bowlies delivers more taste. Download the Pizza Bowlies app for easy ordering. Can you rank the top three most elusive quarterbacks currently in the NFL?
At number three, I will put Baker Mayfield.
Okay.
I know people, they're like, man, how do we miss all these sacks against Baker Mayfield week one? But if you watch him this year, he is making defensive linemen look silly. Like, week in and week out, he is making guys miss. And he's a tough guy to get down. After that, I would probably say Kyler Murray. But it just depends. Like, sometimes Kyler Murray doesn't want to run. So if he's in that mode, then no. But if he's determined to keep the ball alive and run and scramble, it's going to be a long day for you.
He didn't look like he wanted to run against you guys.
No, clearly.
Yeah. And then I would probably say Lamar Jackson one. Obviously, I'm not putting Jaden Daniels on it because he's on our team. But the quarterbacks that we could face, Baker, Kyler, and then definitely Lamar Jackson at one.
Hey, I can't remember what quarter it was, but when Deshaun was pushed out of bounds, it was kind of early in that game, and I think Sanders still actually pushed him out of bounds. And then there was like a little dust-up over there, and you got into it. A bunch of guys got into it. What was being said? And did Deshaun kind of look lost to you? Because he looked lost to me.
There was so much chaos and screaming. I have no idea. I couldn't make out any words.
Were you just trying to get Mike out of there?
I was just trying to go in there and make sure I wasn't the only one supporting my guys. Right? You know, we're a brotherhood, and we got to support one another. We got to fight for one another. And I wasn't going to be the only one not in there trying to help my guys out. So,
but like going back to that play, like Sanders still hit him when he had both feet inbounds.
Oh, it was a clean hit.
It was a clean hit. And then Watson, I guess, took offense to it and shoved Sanders still.
Right.
And then Sanders still, I give him credit, where he just backed off, put his hands up. It's like, I'm not going to draw a flag here, because a lot of times guys that respond to the initial push or taunt are the guys that get flagged. So that was some good restraint from the rookie.
But you
there,
guys
Jonathan.
Had to get over there and protect him, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like I always say, when it rains, of course, when things are going bad, you're frustrated, you get beat down in the media all day, it's frustrating. And that's all that was. You just saw frustrations boil over. Their offense wasn't having success. I mean, it's a lot, man. It's a lot. I mean, you deal with a lot as an NFL quarterback.
Well, he looked lost, too, man, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what did your Sunday look like after you guys got the win at home?
After we got the win, well, I took the long 2.5-hour drive back home.
How long?
Just, 2.5 hours?
It was so bad. I mean, it wasn't too bad, but it was long. And I just hung out, watched some TV with the wife. Got some candy, watch some sports, watch that terrible Dallas and Steelers game. Oh, man.
Hey, you know,
do you guys have food in the locker room, or do you go eat at home?
No, they usually have food for us in the locker room, but I don't know. I've just never been able to be. I'm not a big eater after games.
Gotcha.
Hey, so you're the driver, right, for 2.5 hours?
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's a killer. What are you listening to?
Started off with some gospel, and then we went to country, and then afterwards we just, I don't know, made some calls. To be honest, I have no idea what we were listening to. I was just completely zoned out at that point.
Hey, we didn't mention that you and Daron Payne did the rock, paper, scissors bit to stay in the game. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you go against a quarterback who can move like Deshaun Watson, you definitely want to get more speed out there. So this game we went with the Packers that only had one D-tackle out there. And, I mean, look, we're both competitive. We wanted to stay out there. And, you know, it is what it is. You got it.
Hey, when you're driving home, I know you probably got tinted windows, but does anybody know your car? Do they recognize your car and want to talk to you?
I have my windows tinted, but most people usually take photos and pictures and stuff like that, but it's not too bad.
Right. 2.5 hours is brutal.
Yeah, that's rough.
Just wait longer. Why wouldn't you just wait? I guess you don't want to wait, but...
Yeah. You want to get out of there. Yeah.
I mean,
you want to get out of Northwest Stadium.
His workday's done.
I don't know. Find something to do there.
All right, Jonathan, we appreciate the time as always. Best of luck against Baltimore, and hopefully we're talking about another win next week.
Sweet. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course.
All right, thanks, buddy.
That's Jonathan Allen, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. We'll do EB's entertainment page next on The Fan.
Beamage looking up Kadri Ismail's stats. Duke could play. Yeah. I remember one of the first football players I really remember like hearing and knowing about was Rocket at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Rocket fly, dog.
Yeah, I mean, he was something, man.
That's a cool dude right there.
I'm
going to have to call Rocket.
Yeah, let's get Rocket on the show. Yeah. All right. I mentioned a little earlier there was some stuff that players sent to me yesterday that are said maybe more in a group setting than necessarily to me, but that stood out to me. And Nick Allegretti has been really good for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed practice yesterday. B-Rob missed practice yesterday. I think we're going to get to the portion of the schedule where guys are just going to miss Wednesdays. And if they're nursing something, they just ain't going to go on Wednesday.
Yeah.
The fact that both played on Sunday is far more important.
Especially this day and age, we got to stop being concerned on the Wednesday.
Yeah. Unless it's something new or something pops up. Like, there will be times for concern, but I think right now with B-Rob and Allegretti specifically is not. I do wonder what's going on with Clelin Ferrell, and I do wonder if they should have used an IR spot. But I think the extreme nuance and consternation over roster spots in the new era of expanded practice squads and Saturday night elevations is far less relevant. Like if you go to 2017 or when you were playing B or whatever, like when you only had 47, you couldn't make any changes, that stuff really mattered.
Uh-huh.
Now it's a lot more flexible. But Nick Allegretti, he's been through it, dude. Now, he never really had like a firm starting role in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
He bounced around. He was a pretty versatile player for them. Different guard spots. KC also had a really good O-line for a big stretch. But he was in Kansas City for 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
He won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
He was there for the Bengals games and the Ravens games. Yo, the 13-second game we just talked about, he was there.
Know what I liken it to? Remember the Hawks back in 91?
Sure.
Okay, you had Jake, you had Lachey and Grimm and Bostic, and, you know. But you also had Slarette. You had Raleigh McKenzie.
Rallo.
You had Ray Brown. Okay, Ralph Tamm. All those guys went to other teams and became starters and played extended periods of time. Sometimes you're on a team where the guy in front of you is just that damn good where he thought like I thought. If I don't let you do my job, you can't take my job, right?
Right.
So he sat behind him. And people would look at it, well, he couldn't get on the field. Well, the guy in front of him was damn good. Then he finally gets a chance. He has sat there and he got that experience of being around those guys. He practiced with them every day. He saw what made them work. I'm telling you, when he hit Myles Garrett the other day, I'm like, now that's how I like to see offensive lineman play. He was blocking on the center. And he came off, and he hit him, and he wiped him off of the tackle completely, back on it, knocked him on his back. So, you know, I just think that sometimes it can be kind of understated, where a guy could be so damn good, but still the guy in front of you is that good, you don't get a chance to play.
Nick Allegretti understands big games. He's got three Super Bowl rings. He was asked about Washington. This is the Commander's starting left guard asked about
Baltimore, Washington. I know you want to say it's just any other game, but kind of explain that big game mentality, because you've been a part of many and what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, every week you got to keep it within itself, keep that, you know, keep that game at the focus. But, you know, there's a different feeling with different teams. The biggest thing is just not trying to do anything different. We've created a good culture, a good system of, you know, how we've been able to achieve some success early. And you don't have to do anything different. You know, protect the football, like we always talk about, play with better effort than the other team, have fun playing football. And then, you know, it's going to be one of those games. Hopefully it comes down to, you know, last series, who has the ball. You know, if the defense has to step up to win the game, if the offense has a chance to go win the game. They have a great environment up in Baltimore. You know, pretty much every time I've been there, they bring out some legend. And it's one of those things, the crowd gets hyped, their team gets hyped, but like, you bring out Ray Lewis, it's like, I'm not playing against Ray Lewis, so I can get hyped too. I can watch him do his entrance. So they have a great atmosphere. I'm excited for that.
I love that.
I just thought he's so good. But, dude.
What he's talking about is what Dan said yesterday. They were asking the question. He said, hold on, they're not playing against each other. Talking about
Lamar
and Jaden. Yeah. So, as Allegretti said, I get hyped when Ray come out because he's not coming out on the field.
Well, I also think it's what I keep saying is I don't know how Washington's going to slow down Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. A lot of teams really struggle in doing so. But so far, most teams have struggled in slowing down Jaden Daniels and Austin Ekeler and Brian Robinson and Terry McLaurin.
See, that's the thing about like when we talk about complementary football, if this offense continues to work like they've been doing, that's a big plus for our defense. Because they've been going on 6-, 7-, 8-minute drives. If you go on a 6-, 7-, 8-minute drive, now you put pressure on the other side. And that's also what Baltimore has been able to do. But if you're doing 6-, 7-, 8-minute drives, you're taking away possessions from the other side. If you finish it with a touchdown, you put even more pressure on them. So the offense has to just go do what they do, and the defense have to play like they can play. Now, if the defense can begin to do like they've been doing, offense, like the other teams come down and score a touchdown. We go down and score a touchdown. Then we hold them to a field goal. We get a touchdown. You change the game right there. You change the way you call the game as an offensive coach, as a defensive coach. So we can't, like, try to stop, but I think we could try and limit. Because Lamar gives you chances now.
There's going to be some ball. Like, they keep saying how they want to create turnovers, get to the ball. I imagine there's going to be some chances.
Yes.
I mean, even in that Bengals game last week, there were two balls on the ground that Lamar's strong enough and savvy enough to pick up and make plays. But, like, ball ain't always going to bounce your way. So and nope. Sometimes it's puck luck where that thing goes.
Totally.
Let's go right now to the hotline and welcome onto the show Luke McCaffrey of your Washington Commanders, who are coming off of a fourth consecutive win. They are 4-1, and they've got the Baltimore Ravens on the road on Sunday, a chance to get to 5-1 for the first time since 1996. Luke, welcome back to the show, man. Thank you for the time.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
We're great, dude. We love wins so much. This is a blast. Is it more go to work or more having fun at this stage? And like, what's the balance? You got obviously have to work hard to maintain the level you guys are playing at, but it's also got to be fun. What's like the bigger pile?
Yeah, I think it's been so cool. You know, you look all the way back to OTAs and just how much passion that everybody in this building and everybody on this team has for football. It's been a lot of fun to where I don't know if we've been coming to work yet ever since OTAs, even when we weren't on a winning streak. And so I think it's so fun to just be a part of an environment like that. And then, you know, when that has success, it reassures your faith in a way. But I think there was already a level of faith that we built through OTAs of just trusting the process and having fun every day.
Are you surprised that you guys are 4-1 right now?
I would say surprised. I think we all have just bought into the process, and we've really enjoyed coming out and competing every rep. And I think what's so cool about it is we've seen a lot of growth from OTAs to camp. We've seen a lot of growth through, you know, day one of camp to the end of camp, and now week one to going into week five, six, and hopefully we can continue to get better every week and just stay intentful on every single rep, every single play, and making the most out of every single day.
Luke McCaffrey with us here on G&D. Luke, big one this weekend. The Ravens are good. They've been good. You know, not having the gangbuster season we're used to from them, but everyone feels, myself included, like it's only a matter of time. What kind of challenge do they bring, and you know, just kind of what do you make of them from afar?
Yeah, they're a really good football team. You know, they know how to win. I think when you get to the NFL, every team's going to have good players, and every team's going to have, you know, some level of success. And so to have a team with a lot of just competitors, a lot of people who play the game at a high level is always a challenge each and every week. I think they do a good job of playing as a team, which is something, you know, I know we take pride of in our building. And so I think it'll be a great competitive matchup, and it'll be a good one for us to go out there and compete.
Luke, you guys have had success on the road, dating back really since week one in Tampa. The trip to Cincinnati, Danny and I were in the crowd. It was unbelievably loud. The atmosphere was as good as it's going to be anywhere else, Baltimore involved, right? And Danny actually looked at me right before the game, and he's like, this is going to go very poorly. I won't tell you exactly what he said, but he said,
Lordy.
Yeah, holy cow. Said, this is going to be
the environment was so intimidating.
ye of little faith, wow. That was
exactly.
Crazy.
So, but I say that to tell you, you guys work the Bengals offensively. Then you go to Arizona, you do big things. Are you at a point where you feel like you're comfortable in those environments? It's been low penalty counts, or is it too early to say that?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it just comes down to every game's different. Every game's a different atmosphere. I go back to Cincy, and I think that was just such an awesome environment that I think we all fed off of. You go to Arizona, and I don't know if you can clarify that one as an away game. I think we probably had more fans than them, and so
that's
when it comes
point.
To just having that advantage, having that atmosphere, it was cool to see that covered in burgundy and gold. And then, you know, I think we just got to stay focused on play at a time and just, you know, communicating and detailing everything we do.
Luke, I forgot the other day, Grant reminded me of this. I mean, I guess I knew if pressed, but I was reminded of the fact that you still haven't been playing receiver for all that long, right? This is still relatively new to you. And I wanted to get into that process with you a little bit where, you know, the finer points, the nuances that a lot of people can't do, you're picking up obviously really, really rapidly. How much do you feel you've grown so far? And you know, talk about that process of learning the position on the fly at the highest level there is.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, I've been playing receiver about a year and a half now, and I think I was blessed to have a lot of great people around me when I first switched that were able to help me, whether it was through my team or whether it was through my family. And, you know, guys who are in the receiver room, different coaches. And then once I got here, I think that just highlighted even more between Bobby Ingram, Andre Coleman, who's our assistant receiver coach, you know, Terry, OZ, Diomni, and then, you know, when Noah Brown got here at the end of camp. I think just from top to bottom, it's been really fun to be around a lot of people with a lot of great experience. Because at the end of the day, experience is going to be the number one way to learn, and making mistakes and going full speed. And I think when I've been blessed to be around a lot of guys who have a lot of experience, it's allowed me to kind of just learn from the moments that they've had in their career, and they've had endless amounts of moments of whether it's growth or whether it's success, just a lot of reps at playing the position at a high level.
Playing inside and outside at times, kind of all over the formation, I'd imagine you go up against not one or two, but several DBs over the course of the game. How do you prepare? Do you study the nuances of several different defenders on film, or are you just more looking at things from the 10,000-foot view of scheme and you're not really looking at Marlon Humphrey or individual corners? Like, what is that like?
Yeah, I think a lot goes into it. We do a great job of, you know, preparing in general and getting, you know, the feel for how their personality is, what their attitude is, and then also honing in on the details. So there's definitely a little bit of both of that. I think as a player, you know, the biggest thing is to just play fast. You know, we have a stance saying go run and hit. And so I think that speaks volumes of, you know, you're going to have the knowledge that you gain throughout the week, and then once you get to the game, you kind of just have to go run and hit, and everything else will just be a reaction. And so I think throughout the week we do a great job of studying individual players and then, you know, studying the overall scheme. And then once you get to the field, you're out there just reacting, right? Just playing fast and using your instincts.
How about for you kind of on your own time? Will you hit up either Christian or your pops to get insight on, especially Christian, who's played the Ravens so many times, and get any intel that way, or have your dad look at any tape or anything? Or do you not really tap into those resources because you got enough help in the building? What's your logic on that?
Yeah, no, we help each other a lot. I mean, there's only so much you can do, and there's only so much that you can find out that, you know, we haven't looked at or seen in our building. Every once in a while you'll get a good tidbit or two, but they also have their own games to prepare for, and so it's a lot of fun having those resources to kind of bounce different ideas back and forth. But, you know, it's awesome to have the resources we have in the building too, and just enjoy the different scouting reports, the different opinions, and the different, you know, hard work that everybody puts in.
Luke, at what stage is this offense? And I guess what I mean is, it's, you guys have been unbelievable. You're scoring so many points, and Tress Way went like a month without punting a numbers approximate. It's been incredible. But, like, in terms of where you guys are right now and what some of the stuff you might be doing in 2 months or, you know, December or whatever, like what if we – like, what – I guess a longer-winded way of asking a very simple thing. Like, what percentage of the offense have we seen to this point? Like, how much is waiting in the wings to surprise people?
I think this offense is so fun because it has the potential and possibility to do a lot of different things. You can bring a lot of different personnel groups in. You can have a lot of different motions and shifts. And then, you know, you add tempo to it and you add a running quarterback. And it really opens up, you know, anything that you could think of in the creative world of football, right? And so in terms of what we put in or don't put in, I think it's very, very specific and detailed to, you know, what team we're playing. And so I don't know if that's a way that we necessarily think about it, is by percentage of offense in, but I think it's more a reaction and a constant flow, maybe like a picture, like you're painting something, right? We've all watched Bob Ross, and you're going there and he's painting something and it looks like just a bunch of scribbles, and then you kind of see it play out. For us, that's every week, right? We're trying to build our painting and build, you know, our game plan, and then decide how we want to attack a team and how we want to, you know, create change-ups and counters to, you know, our main way. And then what's going to happen if that doesn't work, or if they come out in a different thing. And, you know, it's always a constant life form of, you know, process and creating something on the go and on the fly.
Is Bob Ross your painter of choice?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I have a painter of choice, but I do love to put that show on in the background. Well,
it's so relaxing.
It's not that bad, right? It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I told you in the locker room, by the way, that we were big on the chocolate lava cake conversation last week after you hung up. So if you score a touchdown or you go for a hundo at any point, it's chocolate lava cake Monday on Grant and Danny. No pressure.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, shoot, let's go for it then.
Let's do this weekend
in Baltimore. Why not?
And if you can mime a chocolate lava cake end zone celebration somehow, I don't know how you do that, but if you did that would go a long way.
I don't know about that. We got to get a local middle school or something and get them chocolate lava cakes for Commander's win or something.
I like that. I like where your head's at.
Love it.
Luke, be good, man. Go get another win. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate you, dude.
Dan Quinn was asked a question about the pistol formation yesterday, and we've seen a lot of shotgun, we've seen a lot of pistol, we've seen a lot of under center, and it was interesting to, I've read the answer, I want to hear what he said, but I actually talked about this, I think, briefly last week, that the pistol is almost like being under center because you can still run some of the play action where you turn your back to the defense and essentially hide the ball. You can't do that in shotgun. Shotgun's more of a mesh, you know, play action. The ball never, you know, is lost from, you know, that front seven or even the secondary's view. I thought his answer was interesting on the strength of the offense when they're in the pistol. For those of you that don't know the difference, and I think most of you do, the pistol is when you see the quarterback lined up similarly to being in the shotgun, except there's a running back behind him, directly behind him, instead of offset. And there's about a yard difference in terms of where they line up in the pistol versus the shotgun. But here's what Quinn said.
Well, I think, number one, knowing that you can hand it off. And I think all three running backs have really made their impact felt in different ways, Sam. It was great to have Austin back. I thought it was a fantastic run on the fourth down play that was in the red zone, where it was a sweep to him, where it was designed to, you know, go outside, but he saw the opening to go. And I think it's the instincts of guys like him that can do that. We saw Jeremy a couple weeks ago, and again down at the end of the game here. When given his moments, you know, he certainly wants to deliver in that space too. So having the run game, whether it's pistol or, you know, out of the backfield, you know, it's a little easier to do some of the play pass from a pistol because you can go either way with the runs. But under or pistol, both of them, you know, are, I would say, similarly effective.
Yeah, that just makes so much sense to me. And I don't think that I've heard a coach explain it that way, but look, Jaden has been comfortable in any of their, you know, formations, in any, you know, under center, pistol, or shotgun. But the pistol is much more similar to under center in terms of what you run. What he said there at the end, you know, from the pistol, because you can go either way with the runs, and it also makes it a little easier to do the play pass. He refers to play action as play pass. A lot of coaches do. And that's because you're turning to hand the ball off to a runner, and it's true play action where the defense has to wait to see, did he hand it off? Or did he keep it in play action? Do they take that step forward and it creates that big hole between that, you know, second layer of the defense and the back layer of the defense or not? At a shotgun, you run play action. There's play action at a shotgun, but it's not nearly as effective. And to his point, it's a great, I think Quinn does a good job sometimes of explaining this stuff. You can hand the ball off. In a normal handoff, you can hand the ball off out of the shotgun too, obviously. But it's like more of a turn and hand the ball because the back is behind you. And, I like when they're in pistol. I like having that play action as a part of what they're doing. I think he's excellent under center. I think the whole, you know, and you saw it more against Arizona than you did against Cleveland in terms of under center snaps. I think you did. I didn't add them up, but I'm going to guess that there was more under center against Arizona than against Cleveland. And they ran some of that play pass or play action, and they also ran some of that play pass boot, where he comes back with everybody going one direction as if it's a zone run, and he's coming back the other way, and he's got options. You know, he's got a tight end, he's got a receiver, but he also, worst case, and he did this against Arizona, yeah, I can just run for 10, you know, 8, 9, 10 yards. I mean, Jaden Daniels as a, you know, zone run, zone pass, you know, play pass, play action pass, boot, off of the zone run scheme. We talked about this before he was drafted. I thought there were so many different offenses that he would fit so perfectly in. And they're getting to a lot of this stuff. It's not necessarily that they got one way of doing it. It certainly looks like every week it's dependent on the opponent, which is exactly the way they should game plan. Can't wait to see what it is against Baltimore on Sunday. I'll tell you this, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, they had a day against that Baltimore secondary. I mean, it was a lighted up show back and forth, 41-38 in overtime. And Joe Burrow, what was his final numbers? Did he throw for 400 or not? It was close to 400, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he was just shy of 400.
392. 392 and 5 touchdowns. He was 30 of 39. He threw a backbreaking pick when they had the lead at the end of regulation, which gave Baltimore a chance to tie the game on a 56-yard field goal by Justin Tucker. But Burrow was 30 of 39 for 392, 5 touchdowns. Chase, 10 catches, 193 yards. That, I can do that math. That's 19.3 yards per reception, 2 touchdowns. He did have kind of a screen that he took to the house from long distance. And T. Higgins, 9 catches, 83 yards. There's going to be an opportunity to go toe-to-toe offensively with what Baltimore, I think, will be able to do offensively against Washington's defense. Should be really exciting. All right, some catching up to do. We did not have a chance to kind of go around the league yesterday in terms of what happened on Sunday. We'll talk about Monday Night Football. Denton's got a quick college Saturday recap. How about the upsets on Saturday? And we'll get to some Denton news as well. Breaking news in the NFL, in fact, this morning. Robert Saleh fired Jeff Ulbrich, who is their defensive coordinator and actually worked for Dan Quinn in Atlanta, is the interim head coach in New York.
Junks are presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com. You can join their team today. Coming up in just about 20 minutes, Nicole Auerbach, who covers college football and basketball for NBC and Peacock, she'll join us at 9:20. So we'll talk college football with her. But we wanted to talk some pro football, specifically Commanders here, as the Commanders prepare to take on the Ravens in...
It's a big one, Cakes.
I mean, I can't remember a more anticipated early season game for... Right. The Washington football team, Commanders, whatever name you want to call
them. No, this is literally, like Jay talked about it, Jay Gruden, when he did his pod with John, John Keim. This is the biggest game of the, could be the biggest game of the year, regular season.
Yeah.
Big, and it's certainly the biggest game, I think, of the week. Most exciting, has that potential.
Oh, yeah. It's probably number one on the board. Yeah.
So with Jaden taking on Lamar, there have been comparisons drawn between the two. And we have some audio from both Dan Quinn and Jaden when they were asked about the question. Let's hear Jaden's response to the comp between him and Lamar from the Ravens.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, growing up, I mean, high school, you get comparisons for college, and then college, you get kind of within the draft comparisons of who this is, kind of the skills type, skill set is like, but I'll say for me, it's kind of just, you know, go out there and it's trying to be unique and trying to be not really different from everybody and appreciate what they could do, because you always learn stuff from other quarterbacks within the league. I'm not closed-minded. You know, I always want to be able to grow. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want to be known as Jane Daniels and not the next such and such.
I can understand that. Wants his own identity. Doesn't want to be comp to Lamar. And look. The guy's got five games under his belt. It's unfair to comp him to Lamar, who has two MVPs and has played in the league for much, much longer.
I don't think it's unfair.
It's not a fair comp.
I think they actually compare very favorably. I mean, they're very similar. So
I think there's a lot of similarities.
For us, I get why he doesn't want to be compared, but we're in the business of comparing, and I think that that's a fair comparison. Who would you compare him to?
I just think it's unfair to comp him to a two-time MVP when hasn't even gotten a half of a season.
I think they're just comparing
his belt.
Just the style of play.
Style of play, skill set, and early success. Mm. Listen, I already told you, I'm going out there, I'm going over my skis. He's going to go down as one of the greats. He's going to go down as one of the greats, certainly of his generation.
I mean, if he stays healthy and keeps on this trajectory, I don't think that's outrageous.
Got a long ways to go, but okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I just think he has all the tools. He's got a massive toolbox.
I think he has all the tools, but Justin Fields probably has all the tools too.
I'm not sure he does. I'm not sure he has the accuracy. I'm not sure he throws guys open. I'm not sure he's as polished a passer. In fact, I'm quite sure he's not as Jaden.
I mean, has Justin Fields ever had a game where he's been like above 80%? Maybe he's
didn't he have four touchdown passes against the Commanders?
Yeah, I don't know if he was above 80%, but he looked like a Hall of Famer.
He did have a great game against the Commanders.
He
that
looked
is
great
true.
That day. And I root for Justin Fields. Yeah. But I think Jaden is different.
I'm just saying that there's more to ability. Like, I think that they probably compare on athleticism and arm talent and all those things.
I think style of play. Pretty similar.
Yeah, it's style of play.
Pretty
exactly.
similar.
They're dual threats.
Personally, I actually think, and Valdez will hate this, I think that Jaden is going to prove to be a really adept passer, so a notch above. And I think Lamar's a probably a more dynamic runner, a little shiftier. But I'm not saying Lamar's not a good passer. I just think that Jaden has potential to be better. But we'll see. Only time will tell. But I agree with you. talent is only 1% of it, or, you know, 50% of it. The other part is the work ethic and all of that.
There are a lot of guys who have, maybe not a lot, but
plenty of guys can run. There are enough
guys who have that ability. And what is separating Justin Fields from being great versus some of these others? It might be the showing up at 4 a.m. It might be the cerebral part. It might be the virtual reality set and all of those things. And the system you're in.
I was asking somebody about a player that was drafted, not by them, but it was a former first-round pick. And they said, basically, they insinuated that person wasn't putting the work in.
Wasn't grinding.
And it's all on that person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say what sport or whatever, but yeah.
Well, that's what we heard about Kyler Murray.
Yep.
Kyler Murray's number one pick and has been solid, but he hasn't reached his potential.
Kyler Murray doesn't look like he loves playing the game when he's on the field.
I agree.
So I don't know where that comes
from. I would be surprised if he likes baseball better.
I don't know where that comes from.
Jaden doesn't have a crippling Call of Duty addiction that we don't know about, does he?
I don't think so.
It's been kept secret.
I don't think so. He just seems to be the real deal.
If you had a
crippling Call of Duty addiction, you probably wouldn't be at the park at 4 a.m.
I would guess not.
Because you'd probably be up all night playing, and you'd be too tired to get up. I don't know.
Answer the question, I don't think it's unfair to compare them because they both play a similar style.
They have a similar style. They do.
Kind of similar physical attributes. I mean, Jaden's a little taller, but I mean, they're both very fast.
Doesn't it get mentally exhausting, though, to comp these guys to all these other guys? Can't you just watch the game and enjoy them for what they are?
You're always kind of comparing.
Are you telling me that you don't compare athletes?
I mean, I've done it before.
I find that very hard to believe.
I think I've evolved.
I haven't paid attention to it.
Past that.
No, so when Alex Saar comes up,
if there's a bigger quarterback, and I'm just going to throw Race out there, bigger white quarterback coming out of college who's 6'4", 6'5", he's got a really good arm. Who's he going to be compared to?
Peyton Manning.
No.
Tom Brady.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
Oh, runner. Yeah. I didn't hear you say that.
Sorry, yeah. So he's going to be compared to Josh Allen.
Well, that's some of it.
Caleb Williams, who was he compared to? Because they play
Mahomes,
similar style, arm angles.
Look, I digest watching football differently than I guess most of the people in this
room. Are you telling me when Alex Saar was coming out and you started looking at tape, or your guy Bilal Coulibaly, you didn't comp him to another player in the league?
I discovered him.
You did compare him to somebody.
I mean,
you have to, because you have to project like what you think this person can be.
It's natural.
I get it. You're in a box right now.
Maybe I just minor in it. It's a minor. It's not a major.
Listen, I'm not thinking about Lamar when he's playing, but if you asked me who is his game most similar to, I think I would say Lamar.
All right, let's hear what head coach Dan Quinn had to say about the comp between his quarterback and Lamar Jackson.
I would say if I had to pick one, that both of these two are elite competitors, like at the highest level. And that shows on the tape, you know, the way they extend plays, the way they finish, the way they lead their group. So that's the part. If I was to make a comparison, it would be something intangible like that. Both of them have their own unique ways about them. But in this game, there's all these guys are fantastic competitors. And then, like in most profession, there's the elite, and these two guys are elite at it.
He doesn't want it. He doesn't sound like he wants to make physical comparisons.
Doesn't seem like
which
it.
Which is fine.
You know what? I'm on Coach Quinn's side. Me and DQ, we're hanging out together.
By the way, is it just me, or is Jaden Dan? I mean, that's what a great athletic name, right?
It's just a
great name. Like, Eric Bickle is not a great athletic name.
Neither is John Allville.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
Jaden Daniels.
Lamar Jackson
is a great name.
Just jumps out at you.
It is. I'm sorry.
Eric Bickle and Jaden Daniels are the same amount of syllables, I think.
It's not great.
I think we've reached peak glazing. We're going over his name. About his birth name.
His parents did a good job.
Some
names pop, others don't. Like,
you don't think Drake May is a cool name?
Drake May is a good name. Here's another good name. NFL NFL name. Nico Collins.
Great name.
I think for quarterbacks, Jackson Dart is a silly name.
Jackson Dart's a really good name.
But if Nico Collins was
Phil Collins,
a teacher at your kid's school, you'd say, He would never say it.
You wouldn't go up to him and go, it's only because Professor Collins, I think he should have been a football player.
You just spit all over
here. I've got one for you. This guy is very unproven, but he's got a great name. Spencer Rattler.
That's a good name.
That's a great name.
It's a great
athletic
name.
Now, he may suck at playing NFL quarterback. We're going to see this weekend.
Not a great name because you could call him Spencer Rattled.
Maybe.
You can make fun of him easy.
Yeah, maybe. But I'll tell you where I first became aware of the idea of a great athletic name is when I was 14 years old and the New York Mets called up Daryl Strawberry and everybody said, this kid's unbelievable talent, mm-hmm. and he's got an amazing name.
But you also liked Chris Hamburger as a kid.
Well, that was a little before my time, to be honest with you.
Is Brett Favre a silly name?
It's kind of a good name.
Kind of a good name. I don't like Favre.
It's one of the worst names ever.
Is Patrick Mahomes some great name? He's a great player.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady's kind of boring.
They've made it iconic.
Matt Ryan.
I don't think Matt Ryan's a great name.
Boring name. LeBron James is a great name.
Okay, what about John Wall?
Good name.
That's a terrible name.
Maybe the worst superstar name.
John Wall's a good name.
It's the most boring name in history. But he's a superstar.
I don't know. Maybe. So I think Jaden Daniels is a great name.
I think you stand up at night thinking about his name is.
I thought about it the other day. This kid's even got a great name. His name could have been. I don't know.
Sam Darnold.
No, Sam Darnold is not great.
Right. Stafford.
Matthew Stafford's pretty good.
Deshaun Watson.
Good name. Bad person. Worst quarterback.
Terrible.
Great name though. Great name. It's a great name.
You like that name?
Mm-hmm. It's a great name.
Brock Purdy.
Yeah, Purdy's not great.
Sounds nerdy. No. He turns into Brock Nerdy. No.
Great name.
Not great.
Brock Purdy, great name.
Joe Burrow.
Kirk Cousins.
Your bias for you like
Kirk Cousins
not
a great name.
We're grading names.
Kirk Cousins, great name.
Kirk Cousins, awesome name.
Yeah.
But back to the play.
I'm going to try to give you
back to the play.
Kirk Cousins. No, it's not a great name.
It is. What?
Back to the play. I get Dan Quinn not wanting to compare, but I'm totally with Jason. Their style of play compares.
Yes.
Now, one could argue that right now, Jaden Daniels seems to be more advanced through five games passing than Lamar did early, but he also wasn't given a chance. How many games did it take for him to supplant Joe Flacco?
I don't know. I'm just obsessed with names now. Derrick Henry, good name.
He wasn't supplanted. Joe got injured.
Okay. Yeah.
They put Lamar in, and then they went on a six-game winning streak.
Right.
Then they couldn't put Joe back in.
So was it 10 games in or so?
Yeah. Like
Joe Flacco, elite name.
No, Joe Flacco, not a great name. That's a good example. That's not a great name.
Right, it's not fantastic.
Go ahead, give me a few more. I'll tell you.
Dak Prescott, that's a good name.
Good name.
Good name.
That's a good name.
Kurt Warner, pretty good.
Average name.
you guys like all the names.
Well, they only like it because
they're
who they were.
I'll tell you a name right now I don't like. Alex Saar. I don't think that's a great name.
You call him Alex Sorry.
I don't think that's a great name.
What about if we're going with quarterbacks, I'll go with Hall of Famers. Troy Aikman.
Great name.
Peyton Manning.
Great name. None of them are Eric Bickle. None of them are John Alvin.
Right.
None of them are Paul
Jason
Flynn.
Bishop,
yeah, but if Eric Bickle was a Hall of Fame quarterback, you'd say, great name.
No, you'd say.
But he's just a Donkey Kong.
I'm not.
That cuts his toenails during commercial breaks. Of course it's not a great name. You like that one.
What about Eric, what about Ben Roethlisberger?
That's a terrible name.
If he says good name.
Roethlisberger's not a good name.
That's a terrible name.
It's impossible.
It's just so unique, though.
See?
It's so unique. Listen, I wouldn't want to be called a Roethlisberger.
No.
That's worse than
Auville. You don't want to be called a burger.
I think it's worse than Auville.
Burger.
Daniel Berger, the PGA golfer. He hates that name.
Average name. Tiger Woods. Great name. Eldrick Woods.
Eldrick, terrible.
Yeah, not great.
Tiger, great. Incredible name.
I would agree with that.
Charlie Woods, boring. They botched it. Charlie Woods botched it.
All right, let's not critique our next guest's name. She's got a great name. Nicole Auerbach.
Yeah, but she's not related to the Red.
It doesn't matter. It's a really good name.
We confirm
I don't think she is.
We're just saying. We're just assuming.
Maybe we can ask her.
I mean, is she, is she the granddaughter?
She's been asked that question probably 9 million times.
That's true. She covers college football and hoops for NBC Sports and Peacock, and she will join us next to help preview Ohio State at Oregon and more. That's coming up next on The Fan.
Commanders Ravens going to be a big one. This is big boy football, man. If you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. And the Ravens, certainly regular season anyway, have been a seriously tough out.
Tough out, definitely.
Here's the thing. You know you're good when the only validation your team can really reach at this point is a Lombardi, right? Like, in Washington, they've been really so bad for so long and so inconsistent, and they haven't won. There hasn't been a playoff win out here in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking about 2 decades. Maybe it's 18 years, but I'm going to round up, okay? Mm-hmm. They haven't had a home playoff win, I think, since you were playing.
Wow.
So, obviously, Super Bowls are the goal, but for Washington, you want them to get to a point where they're a consistent contender.
Yeah.
Where you're going to the playoffs every
year. If you're a consistent contender, then guess what? You can probably make it. But if you're not a contender, you can't make it.
If you're a consistent contender, then all of a sudden, you just got to get hot at the right time. You got to be healthy at the right time. I mean, crazy things happen. What we're seeing with the Chiefs right now is honestly a bit of an example of it. The Chiefs have won back-to-back and 3 of the last 4. I think going into the playoffs, the last time the Chiefs were necessarily the favorite to win everything, it's probably that first one they broke through and won, back when they had Tyreek and the super explosive offense and everything. Last year, they weren't even the one seed in the AFC. They had to go on the road twice, and everybody's like, oh, we don't know if they can go on the road.
But you know one thing
about
them?
Sure enough, they can.
They've been there. And that's what I'm talking about earlier. Like, when you've been through stuff, you don't have to wonder. You know. Pat Mahomes has been in every situation possible. So when you have a quarterback like Pat, if you give him a chance, a la Buffalo, 19 seconds, what did he do with it?
I think it was 13.
13, well, whatever. You're going to lose. The ultimate thing is you have to constantly.
How nuts is that? It was 13 seconds.
Listen, man, it's just he understands how to play this game, what's going to happen, and they don't get flustered. And I think right now we see something building like that, you know, and listen. I know how fans are. I know how media are. We always ahead of the cart. We're ahead of the horse. Then we had the cart way before. But the players are always trying their best to just figure out a way, keep this thing going consistently, and just know what you have coming.
So I want to ask this question. You know, these people in the chat think we're broadcasting from Wegmans. Go find us at Wegmans.
Wegmans?
We're in the sandwich aisle.
That's what they think? Why?
Because they're nuts. I don't know.
Listen, Wegmans in Ashburn.
We're just going to be real. The Commanders are cool with us now. There was a stretch when I was living out of the back of my truck like a homeless dude. But
if you ever noticed, when JB was out the back of the truck, I didn't come here.
So. There's a whole lot of explanations involved there, but we're not going to get into it. I do want to ask. I think Jaden, this coaching staff, there's a million factors as to why something is brewing here, but it does feel like a regular playoff contender is brewing here. And that's going to happen over time, right? Like, 1 year doesn't constitute that, but it feels like you've got the right ingredients. What do you always say to make your gumbo? You got to start with the roux. Like,
yeah,
feels like the roux is a.
You got to build a base, man. They are building a hell of a foundation, bro.
Now, for the people that this bothers, I think you got to relax. I think
what bothers?
I think you're overly concerned about stuff that kind of doesn't matter. If you feel that the point spread for Ravens Commanders at 6.5 is disrespectful, I think you should focus your attention elsewhere. But what that's on you, because you just shook it up and pretended to spray me, and then it
didn't spray. I know it's going to have a little spit of fizz, but, you know.
I tell you what, I'm not sure we need landfill. Beamich is on second.
No, this is protein coffee.
But it's still coffee, though. Still caffeine.
It's not really that much. It's a lot of protein, though.
Do you feel the point spread, and it, by and large, everywhere you look, 6.5 points, Ravens are favored, is disrespectful to Washington?
No. I don't think so, because naturally what they do, they give you 3 points at home. And then when you look at the overall, and they look at look, the one thing about the point spread, it goes about history. It goes about, you know, both sides of the ball, all this stuff. If you look at it, give me 3 at home, and then you would think that 3.5 points would be something that's logical. So now you get to 6.5. No, it's not disrespectful. You know, it's a motivation.
How much of all the motivation these guys need do you think the point spread
you
is?
May not need – you may think this – you may think no athlete needs motivation, but everything motivates an athlete.
Sure.
You think Michael Jordan needed motivation?
No.
So, Joe Dumars, like I said, I said this before, Joe Dumars never said he was the Jordan stopper. Guess who said Joe Dumars said that? Michael Jordan said it. He said it somewhere, then they started printing it in the paper. So, guess what? When you pick up the paper and you see it, although you know you said it, now you start to say, this SOB talking? You made the story up, and it motivated you. Athletes use all kind of stuff to motivate them, dude. I would look at the guy had on the same number as I did. Oh, I'm going to show him who's best. If the guy was from the same town or from the same area, oh, I'm going to have the bragging rights going. Anything motivates an athlete. Athletes are weird. I'm being real.
I'm aware of that. Jeffrey. 6.5 points. Commanders are underdogs to the Ravens. Is it disrespectful?
Not at all.
Really? All right. Explain.
This is all new for us, JP. Just like it's new for us, it's new for the league. You know, some people are fully buying in. Some people are not. Do I care about the point spread? No. I don't care if we win by 1 point. Let's just win the game. I care. Yeah. I care less. I care less about the betting. Let's just win a game. I'm not disrespected at all. And honestly, I like being an underdog. We always been underdogs. We win, it's going to feel that much better. But do I feel disrespected by it? Nah, I'm all right with it.
Jeff's all right with it. Landini.
I think it is. I mean, yeah, look, they're 4-1. They've been absolutely blowing teams out of the water, and they're almost a touchdown underdog in week 6. I think that is, yes, disrespectful to the team.
I think two things. Vegas ain't worried about...
Vegas don't care about nobody's feeling. Vegas care about building buildings, man.
Yeah, they're worried about money. And they're doing their best to get bettors onto both sides of this bet.
Yes.
Now, there are times, and it's important to point this out, because I know that geniuses like Chris Russell think Vegas doesn't know anything. Good luck with that theory. There are times where Vegas has a lean, and they will intentionally put the line one way or the other to get folks off their lean. That mm-hmm. does occur. But most of the time, they just want the money split. And if you look right now, I'm looking at a website that I'm familiar with. Baltimore -6.5, 44% of bets are on Baltimore, 56% are on Washington. If you're looking at the percentage of money, so that's the bet count, right? But every bet can be worth a different value, so $5, $500, whatever. 44% of tickets are on the Ravens -6.5, but 52% of the money is on the Ravens -6.5. So you know what Vegas has, and not maybe calling it Vegas is maybe ineffective anymore because you can bet in Virginia and D.C. and Maryland and wherever else, but you know what the odds makers have on this? An even spread. And then everybody that loses, whatever side you're on, you also lose that 10% juice. And you know who gets rich? Vegas. Huh. So I don't think this is disrespectful. I think this is where they've identified the math. Yeah. I think Washington has the better record in this thing. Baltimore has beaten the better opponents. The only real blemish on either record, I would say, is the Ravens losing at home to the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, Washington lost week 1 at Tampa. That's a team that's won their division 3 straight seasons. Baltimore lost week 1 at the Chiefs as they were unveiling a new Super Bowl banner. That's a tough place to win. The line, here's one, I don't think anybody should feel disrespected. Two, if you do, take the freaking points. Mm-hmm. Take the points all the way to the bank. I think there's reason to like it. If you like Washington in this game,
be fired up
and just take the points. No yeah. fade in Jaden, baby. It's not that complicated.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Luke McCaffrey of the Commanders is going to join us coming up in a little over 10 minutes. Make sure you're listening. Right now, though, we're sneaking in our buddy Brian Baldinger because he's one of our favorite analysts. And as we're getting ready for the biggest game of the season so far for Washington, there was nobody we wanted to break it down with more. Baldy, thanks for a few. I've been seeing some of your analysis and film breakdowns yeah. on the Commanders getting fired up. I know, like the rest of us, you like what you're seeing.
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's a good defense that they carved up last week against Cleveland. Those are some good corners. You know, to see that touchdown throw from Jaden to Diami Brown against, you know, Martin Emerson, I got a lot of respect for Martin Emerson. He's a good corner. Diami ran right by him, and the throw was unbelievable. The throw to Terry McLaurin for 66 yards on a broken play, a scramble drill, you know, avoiding Za'Darius Smith in so doing, it's just an amazing throw. The third down throws to Luke McCaffrey, the protections against Myles Garrett and how they did it. Like, all of it, it's really good. You know, I mean, I know who Jeremy McNichols is. He's been, you know, he was drafted in 2017. I know the kid. Like, he's on his 19. He has scored one touchdown in his career. He's got three in the last 2 weeks. I mean, everything they're doing right now is working outside of a couple drop passes last week.
Bolt, you mentioned protection. That's the thing I've been amazed about. To this point is that Daniels has had time, and when he hasn't had time, he just makes teams pay with, you know, double-digit yard scrambles. But how are they protecting so well? That I've been blown away by how good they are in that department.
Well, they're starting a rookie in Coleman, but, you know, Luke is playing out there, and they're split reps. They split reps last week. You know, whether it was injury-related, I don't know. But, you know, two different guys man their position. I mean, their big acquisition was Biotish. I mean, the guy's a good player, really good player. I mean, he doesn't go to Pro Bowls or anything, but he's a solid player. And I know the kid. He's down at Duke Manny Weathers all off season, working on his core, working on his strength, loves the game. You know, I think he's made Allegretti better. Cosby's coming on. Wiley's just so steady. I mean, it's a good group up front. You know, and then Cliff does a good job of chipping with his tight ends. They're not great blockers, but he's chipping with them. They know what they're supposed to do over there. So, I mean, the protection's been good, but like you said, I mean, you go back to week one against Todd Bowles in that defense, and, you know, Todd, I mean, it was 37-16. Todd Bowles was still blitzing him. With a minute to go in the game, he was still coming after him. But he beat the blitz with his running, and, you know, he's such a fast-twitch guy. I mean, Za'Darius Smith could be right in front of him, and he can make a miss. You know, I mean, it's just it's remarkable because I always say this about him, and it's only 5 weeks now, but, like, he's really, really fast, but he's never in a hurry. And that's a great calmness to have as a quarterback.
Brian Baldinger on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Baldy, what else can you say about what we've seen from Daniels to dive into some of the decision-making? You know, one of the things I saw in college that I worried about was he didn't get out of the pocket and throw ever. I think there were like eight times or something he threw while scrambling all of last year. He's already showing some propensity to – leave the pocket to throw, which is, man, that would be a big development and a game changer.
Well, he's really coachable. I mean, you just, you know, talk to Brian Kelly at LSU about him. When he came from Arizona State, I mean, he wasn't a runner at Arizona State. He added that component to it. You watched the Alabama game last year, and to your point, he went to run, you know, and you go, he can't survive, you know, this game against Alabama, much less do it in the NFL, but, you know, his eyes are up. The throw to Terry McLaurin, he could have easily just run right there. But his eyes were up, and he saw McLaurin come from the other side of the field, and then just launched a bomb, you know? And so he's not just running to run. He's running to make a play, and if it's not there, then he takes off, and he's pretty good. I mean, I've seen him hit probably a couple times where he probably doesn't need to take that shot, probably needs to get down a little sooner. But, you know, he's running out of bounds. He's sliding. He's protecting himself pretty good. But, look, as soon as he breaks the pocket, he doesn't leave just to leave. I mean, he looks at what he's supposed to look at, and then he's looking to buy time and to extend the play and make a play. So whatever they're teaching him, Cliff, whatever it is, he's a good student because he's learning.
Well, you mentioned Cliff, the Kingsbury offensive coordinator. I wasn't sure, to be quite frank with you. I didn't know what to expect in terms of fit here, et cetera. So far, you know, the choir is singing, man. It's been unbelievable to watch. It seems like they've got something, have an answer for everything. It seems like defenses are befuddled as to what to try to take away, and it's resulted in nothing being taken away to this point. What have you made from that fit there with Kingsbury and Daniels?
Well, the little-known fact about Cliff is, I did a lot of Big 12 games. I was out in Lubbock when he was there a bunch, coach at Texas Tech. I always had 10 new plays on his whiteboard every single week that he was trying out. But the really, he always spread teams out, even in the Big 12, even at Texas A&M. He spread teams out to running. Like, and they're a very good running football team right now. You know, Eckler missed a week. McNichols picks up. Bryan is really super solid. Obviously, the quarterback is special. But, they're a very good running football team. They can melt the clock. That's a good defensive front. They ran the ball up and down the field on them. That's really the hidden jewel. And then if you just look at the design of the offense, because you sort of call plays with the predictability of what defense you're going to get. Cleveland's a big man coverage team. They had their man beaters up. The receivers won routes. They come back to Terry McLaurin in the first quarter. It's a 20-yard comeback on timing. Now, you don't do that by accident. You do that by putting in hours and hours of work. And McLaurin's, he's at the top of his route. He's separating. He's coming back. The ball's in the air. It's right where it's supposed to be. Like, you see that over and over again. And that's not easy to run 20-yard comebacks in this league against good corners like Denzel Ward and Martin Emerson, but they did. So they're getting work done in practice. Cliff is a great play caller. I noticed, I don't know if it was last week, or it wasn't last week, it was probably the week before when they blew out Arizona. I saw some sideline shots of him. He had the smallest play chart for a long time when he was in Arizona and Texas Tech. He could have put it in an index card. And now I notice the play sheet is a lot bigger than it used to be, ever. And so I feel like that means the quarterback is digesting a lot and he can handle a lot more. And so he's giving him a lot more right now, probably at the line of scrimmage. 2-3 plays called. He chooses it. Like, I think he's given him more than I thought. I'm doing the game in a couple weeks against Chicago. I'm anxious to talk to Cliff before the game just to see if I want to look at his play chart and see if it's pretty advanced for a kid that's going to probably be making his 8th start.
Yeah, I can't wait to have Baldy on the call. He's going to be on Commanders Bears with the number 1 overall pick, Caleb Williams, who's been playing a lot better this past week especially, and the number 2 overall pick, Jaden Daniels, who early on is running away with the Rookie of the Year Award. 4 Rookie of the Week honors in the first 5 weeks. Baldy, it'll be a quick visit, I suppose, because we got Luke McCaffrey calling in a few, but I do want to get your thoughts here on Commanders-Ravens, because this is the game it seems like that everybody wants to get their hands on. So in our final few minutes here, give us your detailed Baldy breakdown here on Washington and Baltimore. We're fired up.
Well, I just did the Ravens-Cincinnati game last week, so I saw him up close. Lamar is at another MVP level. He's playing better than he ever did last year already, in large part because of Derrick Henry. But the play of Justice Hill, they've kind of fixed what the offensive line is now. It took a couple weeks to get it right, but McCarry is at left guard and Rosengarten is at right tackle. They got that fixed. They got Mark Andrews back and playing really good football right now for the first time. They are a juggernaut on offense. Defensively, they have a lot of problems right now. They lost a lot in coaching. They lost Jadeveon Clowney. They lost Patrick Queen. They've got good players there, don't get me wrong. But they don't look like the same defense anywhere that they were a year ago. And so I think they're very vulnerable. I mean, Joe Burrow looked like he could have scored any time he wanted to last week, practically did. They've got a lot of holes defensively. I'm anxious to see Cliff and how he attacks them, because I think there's a lot of things. They're good in the middle, like they always are. They're big and stout up front. But there's running lanes on the edges, and there's certainly passing lanes down the field. They got exposed by Jamar and T and that group in Cincinnati last week, big time. And I think those are still vulnerable areas.
Baldy, you're the best, man. Always appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
Hey, I look for, thanks, guys. Enjoy this game. It's going to be special this Sunday.
Yes, we've been waiting for this around here for a long time. You know that, Baldy. We will see you at Landover, Maryland's Northwest Stadium in just a couple of weeks. Baldy will be on the call of the Commanders and the Bears.
I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, but he keeps doing it. When Jaden makes a play on the move and throws the ball 60 yards downfield or drops it in a bucket to Diami, what is the impact on that on the defense?
Yes. Yeah, it can be demoralizing, you know, because all of a sudden you're created some long yardage scenarios, you know, just what I was referring to in the third downs. And so to have a big shot to, you know, even when the person's guarded well, to put it in the only spot it could go, the play that comes to mind before today was the one to Terry at the end of the Cincinnati game where there was only really one spot that you could throw that pass. And he had a couple of those scenarios today. And I thought, quite honestly, it was a grimy start for the offense. It didn't go good. And I had told him inside, sometimes you learn as much from that start as you do from the 27 for 29, because different ways. But at the end, what I can tell you is, like, he processes quickly. All right, this is how they're going to go. Then this is how we're going to go play. And so you learn from those as well. And I'd much prefer lessons and learning after winning. I can tell you that. But all of its information, and he's such a remarkable competitor that he does learn.
That was a question that David Aldridge from The Athletic asked Dan Quinn after the game on Sunday, and I think we played it yesterday, but I wanted to play it again because I just loved the first part of that answer when he said, yeah, it can be demoralizing. You know, talking about that, you know, getting away from the pressure and the 66-yard bomb that he threw to Terry. Dan Quinn was a defensive coordinator. He's been a defensive head coach. This was what he was looking for in a quarterback that could demoralize a defense, a quarterback who you think you've got him dead to right because it's third and 13 and you got the right pressure dialed up and you're going to get to him and you're going to force a punt. And then all of a sudden he breaks your heart and he gets outside the pocket and he throws a 66-yard bomb and you're lining up to play first and goal defense 10 seconds later. What was the word? I think I remember the word that Quinn used to describe Jaden Daniels when he was on with the Junkies. This was in the spring before the draft, Denton, and they were playing one word association. You know, they named the quarterback and it was a quarterback that was going to be drafted. And then what was the first word that came to his mind? And when they said Jaden Daniels, do you remember what the word was?
I believe it was playmaker.
Was it playmaker? I thought it was explosive.
It was one of the two.
Whatever. Playmaker, it suffices. It was something that essentially said, that's the kind of guy, I want the guy that demoralizes me as a defensive coordinator, that has that ability to all of the sudden, in a long yardage scenario, break my spirit. And that's what he did on that play. That's what he did on that fourth down and three when they went for it. And Owusu-Koramoah came in off the edge and didn't play contain. I don't even know if it would have mattered if he had played contain. And Jaden just kind of laughed and took it down the sideline for 34 yards. It's the kind of play that Mahomes has been making for several years now. Josh Allen makes. Lamar Jackson makes. You know, these are the plays that separate the really good quarterbacks from the elite level quarterbacks in the league. The guys that have an act two to on a play, you know, a part two to a play. Like, oh, it didn't go the way we wanted it to, but I'm going to get outside the pocket or I'm going to move around and I'm going to create a second play. This is the way Quinn described it earlier in the season. And I think it's a good way to describe it. It's like there's the play and then there's the follow-up within the same play. And the elite guys have that second play within that one play. And that's the one that usually demoralizes a defense. And he's got it. I mean, he has that elite trait. The difference-making trait between really good and elite. Now, to get to really good, you've got to do other things really well. It can't be all about the second part. The other first part's got to be something that you excel in as well. So far, he's passed that with flying colors. He can read defenses. He can process. He can throw with anticipation. He can throw short. He can throw medium. He can throw long. He can throw to the sidelines. He can throw over the middle of the field. He can throw when he's got time, and he can throw and he can process quickly and get it out when he's under pressure. But it's that demoralizing play that Quinn was talking about, that he was looking to find in a quarterback because he knows as a defensive guy what it feels like to have them, you know, first and 10, now it's second and 11, now it's third and 13, you got them going backwards, it's down and distance advantage defense, and then all of a sudden, 10 seconds later, you're lining up playing first and goal defense because of what he just did. It's, and he's done this how many times? I mean, look, I think I said this last week after the Arizona game. This is not a coordinator or a quarterback that says, oh, it's third and long, let's run a draw. Let's run a quick screen. Let's run a bubble. Let's try to get some of the yards back and punt it. Or, you know, look, if they're in field goal range, you don't want to get knocked out of field goal range, or you want to improve your field goal range, that's one thing. You might run a bubble. You might run a draw. But this team last week on third and 13, they dropped him back a couple of times, completed to Noah Brown first down. On Sunday, third and 13, they're throwing a bomb off schedule. He's not looking on a bubble. They didn't run a draw. Now, they did run a screen to Eckler when they were up 31 to 6. And that was smart because they had just dropped him back two plays earlier and he had gotten sacked. So you do want to see better judgment with big leads as it relates to your quarterback's health. They did drop him back at 31-6 in the fourth quarter, or with like 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. And he got, you know, mangled around a little bit on a sack. And then the next third down throw, which was third and long, they threw a screen. But that was game situation. Protect the quarterback in that moment. And then eventually take him out of the game. All right, 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. The breaking NFL news, Robert Saleh let go as the Jets head coach today. Fired. We'll let you know. Denton will have it in his news and updates as to whom they name interim coach. All right, phone lines are open. They are packed. What do you make of this team after five games, and what kind of shot do you give them Sunday? I think through five games, this is a good, very good team with an elite-level quarterback, and I give them a really good shot of going into Baltimore and winning on Sunday.